Hello, what is up, YouTube? What is up? Welcome to the next episode of Hard State Review here. We're about a month and a half into this bad boy. I don't really know time. I think I said this last week, but time is a social construct. So it's fine. We're X amount of days into this. Live, laugh, limp biscuit is my new motto. I've got that hanging up in my office above me right now, and we are a day late with this episode, but that's fine because, like I said, time doesn't really matter anyway. But we've got a great guest for you today, someone that I've known for a few years, and honestly, we've never met in person, and we never really kind of sat down and talked, you know, for an hour like we did a few weeks back to record this episode, and it's our first non-current musical guest, I suppose you could say. He worked in music for many years. I'm 99% positive that's actually how we quote unquote met and kind of connected probably years ago. And that is Matt Stewart. So Matt Stewart, he used to be the manager for We Came as Romans. He started the Screaming Like You Mean It tour. And we dive into all of that, kind of his music background, when the podcast starts. So if you're unfamiliar with him, you'll hear a lot about his music background. And I say he's our first non-current musical guest because he doesn't work in music anymore. A few years ago, he left the music industry after doing it for forever. Him and I get discussed that a little bit more, kind of how long he was in music and what drove him to leaving the industry. And now he runs his own business. He's actually got two of his own donkey daycares, and he's looking, as we talked about, and you'll hear it once you get to that point, where he's looking to open his third location. So he's got a lot of great things going for him. Obviously, you don't open up one location, open up a second one, open up a third one if you don't know what you're doing. So it's a great conversation. He's got a lot of good insight if you're looking for someone that has some background experience or some behind the scenes experience in music, and how he kind of took that and pivoted away from that, really did a 180 from one industry to another, and just took it, ran with it, and is just doing unbelievably well with it. So he's a great guy. It's a great talk about all of those things. And throughout it, you'll notice that, you know, he's very obviously, you know, like I said, he's very successful at what he does, but he's very humble about it. And I think a misconception is when you hear that someone's opening up, you know, their third location of a business, it's like, okay, sure, they're, you know, doing well money-wise, and when do you start relaxing? And as someone that has, worked for small businesses, I know that there's a great misconception about those owners and what they do. And you think that, okay, you start opening multiple locations and you start just kind of coasting through it, right? You start working a little bit less. And that is just the complete opposite of what it's really like, especially for Matt. So I'll stop talking here. As always, you're going to get a little bit of an ad before Matt and I dive into his experience with the music industry and his current choice of work and how he's turned that into a great success. All right. Good morning, Matt. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, doing pretty good. It's nice and early, so feels like a good way to get the day started here.
Yeah, not too bad. Super Bowl Sunday. Can't complain.
Yeah, that's right.
Here in D.C., we got Capitals, Penguins for the first time all year, so the biggest rivalry in hockey. So it's a big sports day for me.
Yeah, no doubt. So who do you got? I'm assuming you probably hope the Capitals win that, but what do you think about the Super Bowl?
You know what? I've been talking to a few, you know, diehard gamblers and a few bookies and things like that, and everybody, it seems like, is putting money on the Chiefs. And I think the Chiefs, but since everybody's thinking the Chiefs, that probably means 49ers because that's the way that Vegas works.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping for a good game either way, man. I mean, you got a good offense against a good defense, and, you know, by the time this goes up, we'll see which one of us is right. But I'm going to go for the 49ers at that point.
Yeah, they've looked really good all year.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, Jimmy G doesn't have to throw it. All he's got to do is throw it 8-10 times and make them good, and that's all they need.
Absolutely.
Awesome, man.
Old school football.
Yeah, dude, it's good. It's been amazing. People keep doubting them all year, and then here they are.
Yep. It was funny because the Bengals played them in week 2, and it was a pick game, and I bet on the Bengals. Looking back on that, probably one of the dumbest bets. I've ever made. But
yeah, that's
hindsight's 20/20, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they've made everybody look bad, but the Bengals especially. I mean, listen, dude, I was a Browns fan. I get it. It's rough. It wasn't a good year for us. So, man, but we'll get started. Let's talk a little bit, I guess, kind of just about your career in music first, kind of how that got started. How did you get into that, and what did you end up doing most of your time there?
Yeah, so when I was in college, my roommate's girlfriend was really into like underground music, Warped Tour type bands and things like that. And I never really was into it, even though I was, 21 at the time. But she, just going to some parties or just hanging around the house, she would introduce me to some music and just started getting really into it. And also at the time I was kind of looking for a new hobby. And when I do hobbies, I kind of go all in. It's just something I'm passionate about. Like right now, golf. I just love golf. Trying to be as good as I can and things like that. But so I wanted to start playing music. So I started playing keyboards, synthesizer, learned piano a little bit. But since, I wanted to go all in, I started a band locally. And this was during the MySpace days. So what I would do is I would find bands all the way up to Massachusetts, then up to Michigan, and then back to my hometown in Cincinnati at the time. And, I would trade shows like, hey, let me come up and play a show with you guys. And when you guys come to our town, we'll play, you guys can play with us. And it'll be a good trade off. So I guess I kind of always, was trying to go as big as I could. The issue was that I just wasn't a very good musician, but I had a very good mindset. Yeah. So we started doing these little mini tours during the summer after my junior year of college, probably 3 months after I started semi-learning how to play music.
Sure.
And then a local band from Cincinnati called Close to Home was like, hey, we see kind of what you're doing. We're the biggest local band in the area.
Yeah.
Why don't you help us do these booking gigs? So, just as a friend, someone in the local community, I helped them. And one of the local bands that Close to Home played with up in Michigan that was also an unsigned band was We Came as Romans. They also played with Icy Stars that night.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, pretty funny how that worked out.
That's crazy.
When I was in Detroit, the guys in We Came as Romans were like, hey, we're like one of the biggest local bands in the area. We're kind of trying to do this too, just trying to tour around the area. But I really kicked it off with those guys. And we just stayed in contact. I booked them a couple mini tours. And they just loved my business sense, and I just loved the people that they were, so they asked me to manage them. I'm going into my senior year. A lot has happened. I've became, good friends with people in the, music community, at least on a local level. Sure. And I really like these guys. So my whole goal was just to try to get them signed or try to get them on a national platform as a friend.
So
I emailed the top 30 management companies in the country, in my opinion, for rock bands. I emailed all of them, and I got no responses at all. not one of them responded. So I kind of talked to the guys. I was like, maybe we need better recordings. You guys are doing good locally, but if you guys really want to get signed nationally, we really got to, do something that, makes you guys actually sign like a national band.
Yeah.
So we put our money together, and we recorded with someone who was about 40 miles west of me when I was living in Cincinnati, named Joey Sturgis. He was doing some, signed bands at the time. The Devil Wears Prada, who was blowing up, Attack, bands like that. We were like, hey, we only have money for 4 songs, but let's go in there and do it just to get professional recording. So we went in there. The guys killed it, recorded 4 really good songs. But then after we had the songs, we wanted to find a way to maximize. And there's SoundCloud and there's streaming services and things like this now, but even just 12 years ago, nobody was really releasing their music for free. People were still releasing like 5-song EPs and charging $5 for them and things like that. So on MySpace, what I decided to do was I was like, let's just consider this an investment. Let's give all of these songs out for free. Professionally recorded with Joey Sturgis. Let's just put it out. When they did that, they were they moved all the way up within 1 week to number one on MySpace unsigned bands. Alternative Press 2 months later contacted me and said, hey, they're going to be on our top 10 unsigned bands of the year. And then I'm like, oh, that's great. And then that actually ended up being the number one unsigned band of the year. So then I'm getting record label offers sent to me left and right. And I'm still new to this. I don't really know what's going on.
Sure.
So I contact the same 30 management companies. I get one phone call. It's a guy named Mike Mowry, who owns outer loop management. He called mm-hmm. because he was just traveling from DC going up to New York. And he goes, hey, you know what? I saw kind of, you know, you're looking for record labels, things like that. He goes, did Victory Records offer you a record label deal? I was like, they are one of the ones that did. Yes.
He yeah.
goes, all right. You know what? I'm on a short drive here. I haven't really had a chance to check out the band, but I saw your email and I see that you guys are getting traction and getting offers. So if I never talk to you again, do me one favor. Do not sign that band to Victory Records. So I'm like, yeah, okay.
That's and then, familiar.
And so that's the end of that conversation. But then a day later, he contacts me again and goes, hey, you know what? I actually checked out the band. I love them. When are you guys coming, you know, either to DC or New York or something like that? I go, well, you know, we're doing one of these mini tours again going through New Jersey. And he goes, you know what? I'll be there. And he brought a booking agent with him. And, you know, I kind of leading up to that date, talked to Mike. And he really liked what I had to say. He was growing his management company. And yeah. when we met, you know, he talked to the band. He talked to me. And something really cool that he did was he wanted to have this kind of be a partnership.
Sure.
The band really wanted me to stay involved, kind of still wanted me to be the point person at the time. And, you know, they crushed the show. They did well. They signed with a booking agent right then and there. We got on with Mike, and Mike was able to find, you know, Equal Vision Records, get a record label from them, which turned out, you know, a very good deal for them and something we're happy yeah. we did at the time. And then I had a decision to make. I'm 20 credit hours short of graduating from college, where I have an opportunity to go down and live in Washington, D.C. and pursue music. Yeah. So I did that, and I just worked my butt off, you know, managed a few other bands, Sleeping with Sirens, The Word Alive. I started the Scream It Like You Mean It tour, managed Close yeah. to Home, The Color Morale. You know, I got very, very lucky in a lot of the bands that I was able to work with, but I worked yeah. very hard at a young age. Now, you know, granted, I'm in my young 20s at this time, too, so sure, I'm very young, sure. and this is new. And, you know, again, I didn't even know what Warped Tour type bands were until I was 21 years old, and here yeah. I am, age 23, 24, and I'm managing... you know, bands that are debuting on the Billboard Top 10.
Yeah, yeah.
So it happened very fast. But I think a lot of it is just by, you know, having good communication and making sure that, you know, you're not afraid to ask questions or teaming up. And, you know, that's something I learned a lot in the music industry. Now, you know, a few years kind of pass. I'm still working with the same bands. But, you know, I kind of, in my opinion, I was kind of outgrowing the management company I was at. The relationship there, I felt... I was giving a little bit more than I was receiving and getting taken care of. And looking back at it from a business mindset now that I'm, you know, a business owner of multiple yeah. businesses, I definitely was taken advantage in a way. Mm. You know, when I first joined, they were like, hey, you know what, we're going to split commissions like this. Then sure. they're like, hey, we want to move to a bigger offices, so you're going to have to give a bigger cut. Hey, you know, we moved to bigger offices, we want to hire more assistants, so you're going to have to give a bigger cut.
Yeah.
And things like
yeah.
that. Hey, by the way, your travels, all that's going to have to come out, and things like that. And I understand from a certain business point, of course, you know, there's giving back and stuff like that. But,
definitely.
You know, I wasn't an owner of the business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was yeah. giving so much, and it kind of just burnt me out because the bands were doing extremely well, and I felt like I wasn't really getting taken care of. And then I had to make a decision of, hey, do I either go to L.A. or New York, and I have to move?
Yeah.
My girlfriend at the time was in law school in D.C., so I really didn't want to leave the D.C. area.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a weird way, you know, there still is a little bit of loyalty. You know, this guy brought me on when he didn't have to, and it really did help kind of take, you know, the band to a national level, which
yeah.
Or an international level. That was, you know, really cool to see. So it kind of just wore itself out, and I was entering the final few months of my contract, and I had a heart-to-heart with my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
She really didn't want me to leave. She goes, what do you really, really want to do? Like, do you still want to do music? And I was like, you know what? I do love music, but it was kind of a phase thing for me. And she knew all along that I love dogs. I mean, I've been a professional trainer since I've been 18 years old, and that's
yeah.
something, even up to this day, I absolutely love. And she goes, well, why don't you just do that? So I just started kind of training dogs. When my contract ended, I just left. Altogether, like I left my bands, I left everything. I think a lot of people in the music industry were kind of shocked. I think a lot of people kind of look at it as like maybe it was a bad relationship between Outer Loop and I.
Sure.
And I wouldn't say it was a bad relationship. I would just say our contract kind of came to an end, and we were kind of like, I had to do something that's different for me. You know, I was 29 at the time. I was going into age 30, and in my head, I was like, oh God, I'm gonna be 30. Like, I really got to figure this out. Do I be selfish and just try to keep these bands and go do my own thing, keep all the commissions? Or do I want to try to start my own management company?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Go join a huge management company and kind of be in the same situation as it is now. And, you know, I kind of looked at all that, and she, you know, my girlfriend at the time, you know, had me kind of write down pros and cons of things. And, you know, the pros were working with dogs makes me more happy. I felt like in this area I could stay here and still do very well. And, you know, the cons, you know, the music industry I felt like was kind of going down. Album sales were kind of going down in a way. Sure. It's very hard to make money. You know, I'm managing bands that, you know, I'm not going to get phone calls at 3 a.m. because one of the band members is caught with Adderall in Australia and saying, hey, how do you get me out of this?
Yeah.
I'm not going to have, you know, a band that I just, that begged me and sent me 100 emails in 2 months to manage them. And I finally pick them up and they don't get the A Day to Remember tour and they get all mad. And so stuff like that. And I was just, you know, so I finally decided, you know what, I'm 30. If I'm going to pursue what I ultimately want to do, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
So I took a little bit of time off and I ended up doing it. And then, you know, my girlfriend passed the bar in Maryland. You know, we were living in like DC, Virginia.
Yeah.
And so I moved here to an area called Crofton, which is right by Annapolis. It's basically right in between Baltimore and DC. So still in between where, you know, I was doing my dog training stuff and where she just passed the bar. When I moved out here, I realized there was no dog daycare, boarding, or big facilities out here. And when I lived in D.C. and Virginia, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
So I was like, why isn't there anything like this? So decided to open my facility. Blew up very quickly. Within 3 months, we had to double in size.
Jeez, yeah.
So we had to open in construction. And then 3 months after that, we got a great offer for Annapolis to open my second location. And here I am 3 years later, I'm about to open my third location. So, it's just been a lot of hard work, but... You know, looking back on it, I wouldn't, it's amazing kind of how things played out because, you know, leaving the music industry, I had a very, very good resume, I feel like, in my 20s. And to just kind of stop and just do something like this, I think it's shocking to a lot of people. But I could not be more happy the way that things have turned around for my life and the way that things are looking forward. I mean, you know, we're about to open our third location. And I'm already looking for a fourth location as well. I have 50 plus employees of my own. And it's just the amount that I've grown is it's crazy. And it's so funny because the potential that you can have as a small business owner is you can do so well for yourself and do such good things for the community. Or you, and just by having a small dog daycare business, or you could manage, you know, a Billboard top 10 band and stuff like that. And financially, it's like the same exact thing, or maybe you can do better as a small business owner. So it just kind of shows how hard it is to make it in the music industry.
Yeah.
And how quickly things can change, you know? That's with any business, but, you know, in music, you could have a band that's just absolutely killing it, and then all of a sudden, their singer decides to go solo, and what are you doing? You know, the same fans are you're going from touring in front of, you know, 2,000 people a night to touring maybe in front of 200. You have a great album and everyone loves you, and then you write an album that no one really cares about, and then same type of thing. So it's just, it's up and down. It's a roller coaster of emotions. That's kind of my story. Kind of started as just a junior in college, just deciding to play music one day, and then booking little small tours with other MySpace bands, and meeting the right friends and meeting the right people, and then working hard to kind of get where I'm at now.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it's a great story, man. And, you know, Close to Home is kind of one of those bands I wanted to just touch on that. I mean, they were one of the first bands I actually ever interviewed was Close to Home up in they came up in Columbus, and they played at this old. It's not even there anymore. This little teen club at the time, Club 7. And, man, that was one, that's an interesting venue. I don't know if you ever came up for any of those shows. You probably did. But, they were a great band. I talked to Josh at the time. And, you know, they were going up. You know, they were heading up. And then some things just kind of didn't work out the way that, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, music is a lot of luck. You know, kind of breaking at the right time and coming in. And some, you mentioned, you know, We Came as Romans, I See Stars, Close to Home. And you see some of those still around and some of them not, you know, in different levels of success. So, but I think either way, man, it's hard, you know, it's hard to do, but I think they all had great success in their own ways, you know, and it's interesting looking back on it for sure to see kind of how everyone was so intertwined at one point, you know, I mean, and you and I would have been not even that far apart at that point in terms of, you know, steps. Like you look at those six degrees of separation, right? I mean, so it's just, it's kind of crazy to think about, but I'm glad that you've found something you enjoy, you know, a little bit more. So I'm sure it was stressful at first, but doing something that you're passionate about you can handle a little bit more stress. You know, it doesn't seem like stress, but even though it is, you know, but you can handle a little bit more than, like you said, 3 a.m. phone calls or trying to get someone out of a crisis.
Yep. And I got to be honest with you. I mean, being your own boss, it's one of the greatest feelings in the world. I don't have to, you know, respond to anyone.
Sure.
I get to do kind of what I want. But also, it's one of those things you can't blame anyone. You know,
yeah.
Ultimately,
yep.
It's always on you. So me, I kind of like that kind of responsibility. I kind of like the challenge because, you know, if I fuck up, or I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on this.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, it's all right.
you know, if I fuck up, then, you know, it's something that is it's on me, you know.
Sure,
it's,
sure.
Something I have to take responsibility for, and I personally have to, you know, acknowledge where, you know, if you kind of work in the music industry, you're working with so many teams, you know, if an album doesn't do well, there can always be kind of a blame game or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
It's doing your own thing. I don't care what it is, even if it's more small scale, even if you just have one other employee or you're working with someone on a partnership or you're just trying to build something, it comes down to just a lot of hard work and acknowledging. I mean, you really are up to you how big you can make it.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, you can't, as long as you just kind of have the mindset, I'm not going to feel sorry for myself and I'm going to just bust my butt, you know, wake up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. before everyone else gets up. I'm going to work, you know, an hour or two later than anyone. That's really what it is. You know, I kind of look back in my, you know, we kind of talk about close to home, a lot of it being luck. I think what a lot of people need to realize is, you know, in the music industry, a lot of these bands don't make it or something like that. It's because I haven't worked in the music industry, I think, in, you know, 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
But the amount that I know just from being older and kind of seeing the real world is so much more different. You know what I mean? And, you know, when you're talking about bands that are getting signed, I mean, they are getting signed at 18, 19, 20, you know, in their young 20s. Whereas if you're a new band and you're in your mid-20s, I mean, you're already working, you're kind of screwed in a way. You know what I mean? People really aren't going to be able to want to work. They want to work with as young as possible these days. Just because they're more active on social media. You want as young fans as possible to grow with you, to build a cult,
or
things like that. So, you know, I mean, I think it's just, you know, a lot of these bands are young. They don't know the big things. And you look at some of the biggest bands, especially in the genre that that we have, you know, you look at the guys like Bring Me the Horizon and A Day to Remember. Even at a young age, they were so smart by the way that they did things from a business standpoint. You know, I went out and, you know, I would travel with the band. I would, you know, have some pretty long, fun nights of partying and things like that. You look at the guys in A Day to Remember and, you know, they had their fun and stuff, but you know, it was always, you know, business first.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's hard for a young person. It's kind of hard for anyone. But, you know, I look at the amount that those type of bands have worked to get to where they're at. And they have worked very hard and they deserve it. And anyone that I can tell that's younger or, you know, because people always say, you know, Matt, you're in your mid-30s. How do you have, you know, 3 businesses and opening a 4th and all this other stuff? And there is no secret to it. It's just hard work.
Yeah.
You know, I look at it and people might look at me as, you know, a 35-year-old business owner who's, you know, operating a couple businesses that are doing well and have 50 employees and think, oh, you know, he must have had money growing up or he must have got lucky or he must have done something like that. But the truth is, I go, well, how many 50 or 55-year-old business owners do you know? Because I work as many hours as they have.
Sure.
You know, people are working, you know, if you have your average 25 to 50 year old that's working 35 to 40 hours a week, well, guess what? For the past, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 plus years, I've been working 80 to 120 hours a week.
Sure.
So it all evens out and it's no secret. I mean, sure, luck helps, but you kind of create your own luck and all, I mean, if you put your mind down to, I mean, if as long as you're willing to work hard every single day and, you know, try to do more than what other people are doing, you will get ahead. And
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of like open to closes, hours, you know, even extending past that, you know what I mean? Especially when you're first starting out, you kind of have to, I think a lot of people think of it, like you said, it's all, you know, money, money, money. A lot of it is certainly money invested. You know, you got to invest money, obviously getting, you know, the one, the employees, the location, the building and everything like that. But then you got to invest all your time. And, you know, that's I think some part where some people are like, oh, either they didn't anticipate that or they don't want to work 80, 100 hours a week because it is, I mean, it's draining in ways, you know, but if you want to have a successful business, you got to make sure that it succeeds. And how's the best way you can do that? By being there, you know? Yep. I mean, I've not in the same level, but I've, you know, ran restaurants and it's obviously very different, you know, but when you're running it and when you're in charge of something, whether it is, you know, your own business or just kind of taking care of it for somebody else, you know,
things certainly operate differently when you're not there, you know, whether it's just small things or sometimes larger things, you know, and, you know, so you have to make sure that one, you're there and make sure it's going smooth, and you got to also make sure that we have got the right people, you know, because having the right people, obviously, you know, this having 50 employees, that can change everything. You know, you can start to be there maybe a little bit less, or you can trust them with some things that you don't have to do as much. So it's just, yeah, I can't imagine, you know, having three businesses at this, you know, obviously I'm only 26, but, you know, having, you know, that much going on, I'm sure it's pretty busy time for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people are everything, and
yeah,
no one can grow anything that's big without help from others. And, sure. And it's about taking care of other people. I kind of look at it, you know, back in my music industry days, you know, at the very beginning, I was very grateful for, you know, how things were, are, yeah. But people, as they get older, people adapt and they need more help. And if you try to be greedy or take advantage of people, it's just going to hurt you in the long end.
Sure.
So,
sure.
I always kind of keep that in mind. I do feel like we have a very good staff, which I'm very proud of, but you know, some of the faults of my own or some of the things that really bother me that, you know, prevent me, I think, from growing even more are also, in a weird way, the same things that kind of give me advantages. You know, when I left the music industry and I was doing well, I decided to kind of start this dog training and now, you know, dog daycare boarding facilities where, mm-hmm. you know, each of our locations now do 100+ dogs a day.
Yeah.
It was I knew that there was going to be kind of an eye on me of like, hey, what is he doing now? And I didn't want to, you know, look like I was being embarrassing. Like, I really care about what other people think about me. At least I did at the time. And yeah. I really cared about making sure I was still going to be, you know, successful. And that really pushed me. I mean, being scared to kind of fail or being the thought of being embarrassed at that time for me really kind of pushed me over the edge.
Sure.
Because I just knew, I was like, I have to have this work and I have to have it be great.
Yeah.
And I just made sure that it happened. I mean, when you talk about being there, yeah, I mean, I was there from open to close.
Yeah.
From each of our locations, they opened the first 3 or 4 months.
Sure.
You know,
and sure.
It's a dog daycare. So, you know, people are getting there at 5:30 and they're not leaving until 9:30. So
yeah,
you're doing that 7 days a week. It can take a lot out of you and you can feel like you're getting burnt out. But my whole mindset was like, I have to make this work. I have to be successful at this. And, you know, I'm a little bit older now, so the whole "do you really care what other people think of you" has really changed. You know, now I really kind of just care what I think about, and a lot of things that were important to me in my young 30s aren't as important to me anymore. You know, my health is obviously something that's super important now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Taking care of my family. I have both of my brothers here actively involved in the business in the third location. They're getting ownership as well for it.
Oh, awesome.
And, you know, as you get kind of older, it's your responsibilities kind of change, and it's just you just got to keep adapting. But you know, I always try to tell people this. You know, the things that really bother you or the negative energy that you have, you know, you should use that energy to create a positive. Instead of using that energy to be upset or pissed or kind of down on yourself, use that same energy, because you have some built up energy. Use it to go do something positive. Or when something bad happens, look at it as a good situation. I write a book. You know, there's a guy named Jocko, ex-Marine, huge now, big motivational speaker, does a lot of just great work with entrepreneurs, and he's a great entrepreneur himself.
Yeah.
And in the way that he looks at things is, let's say a disaster happens in your life or a disaster happens in business. Then what you know what you should do is you should look at it and say, good. This is great because now I'm going to overcome this, and this is going to be some hard work, and this is what separates the good and the average and the bad businesses is when something bad happens and all of a sudden in your mind you go, good, let's crush this, let's make the best of this situation.
Yeah,
that has changed my mentality a lot, because if things are going good, everybody can do it. Everything's easy. Yeah, great. Everything's good. No problems at all. Don't have a worry in the world. But it's when bad things happen. And not just from a business standpoint, but in personal life too. You know, when bad things happened to me years ago, before I kind of got this advice and changed it, it really would affect me. I mean, I would lay in bed. I would, you know, get out of bed late. I would go out and I would party too much. I would, you know, drink a little too much at night or drink a little too much than I should. And I was just, you know, I mean, I never had a problem or anything like that, but I would just try to get away from it. You know, I'd go out to bars and have some drinks and things like that. But, you know, I was always trying to kind of just use that energy or bad stuff as kind of like a getting away, like, ah, you know, fuck it, like, whatever, I'm just gonna get my mind off of this type thing. But what it really is good advice. Next time anything bad happens, just in your mind, just go, good. You know, this is great because now this is going to be awesome when I overcome this.
Yeah.
It's going to look really good. And also it's kind of, you know, in a weird way, I think it kind of motivates your employees or the people that work with you or the people that look up to you, because when they see something bad happens and they see the way that you are proactive and handling it and staying in a positive mindset, that just changes culture altogether.
Oh yeah, you can get them. You can get, you know, like you said, the people you work with, the you know, maybe kind of buy in a little bit to what you're doing. You know, especially kind of when you're running your own business and something happens. You know, obviously the easy thing is to go, oh fuck, you know, now what? You know, and there's certainly like, I'm sure there's a split saying like, okay, damn, now what? But you're like, all right, it's fine, we'll get through it. You know, and then you can get through it, and then you can either come out on the other side and go, okay, we learned something from that, and you also, you can, you know, maybe try to avoid some of those things in the future, at least if it's self-inflicted, you know, or not self-inflicted, but something that you could have avoided, you know, and you can figure out, okay, what can we do better to avoid going through that again, whether it's, but, you know, at the same time, if it's an outside influence, then there's not much you can necessarily do to avoid it, but you know how to handle it, so if it happens again, you're already starting off on a better foot.
Yeah, I'm talking about like normal things. Obviously, you know, there are certain circumstances that, of course, everyone should kind of, you know, get their mind off and separate and things like that. But I would say 99% of problems in this world that people have becomes a bigger problem because of either their mindset or because their actions after the thing that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like, you know, when you're having your own business, and especially for you specifically, I know one of the things you mentioned earlier was that you were really good at communication kind of in the music industry. And I'm sure that something like that has probably helped you when you're transitioning right into becoming a small business owner. And, you know, do you think that that's something that kind of stands out? I guess what I'm looking to kind of ask is, what do you think is the most valuable thing? Is it communication that you learned from the music industry that kind of helped you when you were starting your own business?
You know, I mean, I wouldn't say communication is the most, I would just say learning. I would just say all the things that I've learned. You know, I mean, I look at everything that I've kind of learned, what I've worked with and things like that. And
yeah.
Something with my new business is I do what I'm good at. You know, a lot of people that they're trying to grow their professional career, they're good at certain things and not great at other things.
Sure.
Well, then just do the good things and have other people do the things that you're not good at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm not great, you know, of doing things like, I'm just trying to give a good example.
Yeah.
Of stuff. I'm not good of like checking day-to-day tasks of everything that's going on or something like that. I'm not really good at, I'm more of a big picture creative, making sure the overall story is going in the right direction. But I'm not the greatest at making sure chapter by chapter is going there.
Sure.
So that's why you need to have employees that, you know, are the ones that are, you know, that thrive in those type of things. And when you put together the right team, that's important. I would say, you know, similar to music, you know, if you kind of look at it as like a 5-piece band or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, if the bass player is really good at, you know, being the person on social media and marketing and things like that, he's the one that should be doing that. If the drummer sucks at social media or he's the one causing all these issues, he shouldn't be the one that's trying to do, you know, that kind of stuff. So you can do very well for yourself if you just kind of just agree or, you know, say, this isn't what I'm good at, and just don't even worry about improving on those things anymore. Just concentrate on what you're good at and try to maximize on that. Like, I guarantee you, LeBron James isn't, you know, he's trying to maximize by being a great basketball player. He talks about loving football, but I guarantee you he's not out there trying to, you know, be a tight end in the NFL. You know what I mean?
Sure, so,
it's been crazy, you know, just the amount that I've learned over the years.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want to just kind of ask you something specifically, you know, about going back into music. And I know, you know, even before this, I know you mentioned, you know, you did, of course, do the Scream It Like You Mean It tour. And I was just kind of curious, what goes into, you know, starting something like that? Because obviously it's, you know, it was a annual tour, right? It was a national tour. It wasn't just like a one time, all right, we got this, you know, package that, you know, I'm managing, we came as Romans. Boom, there you go. It's a tour, simple 3-band tour, you know. So what was going into that? Like, how did you come into the idea of, hey, I want to start this kind of big annual festival and we're going to get going with it?
So The biggest tour, which every single band and kind of like scene type of bands or pop rock bands or, you know, indie type bands are trying to get every summer, they're trying to get Warped Tour.
Yeah.
That's the biggest tour. Everyone's trying to get it and things like that. And then bands that wouldn't get it, you know, they kind of had to figure out what they needed to do. Now I'm working with a management company and, you know, I'm working with another band or two with Dave Shapiro, who obviously has a bunch of great bands.
Yeah, for sure.
And, I'm just a good friend, you know, and him being a good friend, you know, we were like, well, why don't we just do our own thing, like smaller, but in clubs and try to get a lot of our bands on something that will make them still feel good.
Sure.
So, I think it was just, you know, I was managing 6, 7, or 8 bands at the time. Only 2 or 3 of them could get Warped Tour. And I wanted to kind of take care of the bands, and it was just something that kind of happened. You know, it's not easy, obviously, because when you own a tour, you're responsible for paying every single band every single night. Their guarantee.
Yeah.
You're the one working with promoters. If a show doesn't do good and they're like, listen, you know, can we not pay you as much or can we give you less? You know, that you can't go and tell the bands you're going to give them less. So that was the first like thing where I kind of looked at it as a business. Like Scream It Like You Mean It was its own business.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, we each had roles and things like that, which, you know, going back to kind of what I talked about, people do what they're good at. I'm more creative. I'm thinking big picture. I was probably the face kind of that tour.
For sure,
of, you know, getting it together and kind of, you know, making sure that, you know, we're getting all the bands and things like that. And Dave Shapiro, who, you know, has a ton of great talent with, you know, the roster that he has, and he's, in my opinion, I mean, I don't know this now, but, you know, one of the best booking agents in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, his job was to book the shows, help put together a lineup. And my job was to make sure, you know, the website was going good, that our VIP tickets are doing good, staying on top of, like, ticket sales and all that wonderful stuff. And I think that's the reason why we were able to keep that going for, you know, quite a few years was we just had a good team that worked well together that knew their role.
Yeah.
And we all kind of just thrived in our role. And, it was good. I mean, that was a tough thing. And not only that, you know, I absolutely love the band Story of the Year.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, it was coming down. They were doing their 10-year anniversary tour on an album they sold, like, 1 million records on.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's when I first started doing music or getting into it, Story of the Year was a band that I absolutely loved. You know, it was one of the first bands that girl showed me when we were sitting in our apartment. And, I just, you know, like my contract was kind of coming to an end. And when they did their 10-year anniversary tour as a Scream It Like You Mean It tour, which means they did my tour for their 10-year anniversary tour, sold like 1 million records. It was kind of in a weird way. I was like, you know what? Like, this is, like, I am so satisfied with what I've done.
Yeah.
And I am so happy. Now, granted, is it one of the biggest tours that I've had? No. I mean, I've had bands Sleeping with Sirens. I've had We Came as Romans do much bigger tours and things like that.
Sure,
But just the satisfaction that I had personally of that happening, it just kind of made me feel like, you know what? The reason why I got into this is kind of because of this band, how much I love this band.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of a great way and like a weird way to kind of go off. Like, That album is now going to be like the final tour that I really do and am part of in music.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, afterwards, something that a lot of people don't know is I got a lot of offers to go join other management companies and things like that. But, I mean, we're talking like stuff that I wasn't even involved in music. I mean, we're talking about some bigger pop artists and stuff like that. I still just kind of stuck to my true word and looked at the pros and cons sheet and decided to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's cool. I mean, it seems like it was, you know, kind of the perfect way to come full circle, you know, with Story of the Year. Say, okay, well, we're going to put this together for them. We're going to do one last tour. I'm going to go out, you know, and I think that's something that you found what worked best for you, you know. And I think obviously one has worked out so far, and it seems like you don't have any regrets about saying, you know, fuck it, I'm out, you know. And so that's always a good thing.
Story of the Year, we can look at it as a storybook ending.
Yeah, there you go. That was a great record. I was actually at that tour in Cleveland, you know, and so it was it's a good show. They were a great band. I don't know what they're doing now. It doesn't seem that they're doing much, but, you know, I think that was kind of a big thing for them, you know, doing that tour.
I am so far out of the loop of the music industry, you have no
idea.
I haven't gone to a concert in a while.
Yeah.
And I just, it's not that, like, I'm, it's not like I don't like music or anything like now. It's just so funny, like, when you kind of get out of it and you stay busy and you focus on something completely different, how much just your life kind of changes.
Sure, sure.
You know, like, I just, I probably should have done a better job of staying in contact with some of my friends and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, it's just, I bet if I went and just, like, went and sat down with some of my friends that work in the music industry now, just how different it is, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, how it seems like everything now is about streaming and not about album sales.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how, like, how you break a band now. I don't know if you just have to, like, go on SoundCloud and just keep posting free shit.
Yeah,
until
yeah.
it works out. Like, I have no idea. And you're talking about somebody who's 35 and in my 20s, you know, I was probably one of the top managers in the entire country being somebody in their age 20. So
sure,
it's just crazy. And I mean, and who the hell even knows what's going to happen? That means in another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, dude, it's been turned upside down on its head. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where the music industry, you know, kind of has to evolve because it doesn't have a choice, you know, but I think one thing with it is it's streaming. I think the transition to streaming probably should have been done, you know, many years before it was. You know, I think you had a lot of, and maybe still do to this day, have a lot of big kind of record label executives that are like, okay, I don't get it. You know, or they thought maybe it was just going to be a phase. And then all of a sudden you see Spotify continue to grow and you see Apple's like, oh shit, well, we want to make one, you know. And then at the same time, there was a point when everybody had a streaming service, you know, and now it's really down to two, in my opinion. It's really down to just Apple and Spotify, and you've got a few that are kind of still out there. I guess, you know, Tidal's still kind of kicking around for some reason, you know. But, I mean, that's it, you know. And like you said, people don't buy albums anymore unless you're, you know, Taylor Swift. And even then, the sales still aren't what they were for her, you know, probably 10 years ago, you know. Yep. So, aside from Adele, who, you know, sold 2 million records in 1 week, you know. But that's an outlier. I mean, that's insane. So, I think... Yep. You probably got out of the you know, the right time in terms of what was good for you, you know. And if you went back into it now, I think it'd be funny if you did sit down with somebody and say, hey, what are, like, how do you break a band? And you'd be like, what the fuck does that, like, how does that even work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I am clueless.
Yeah.
I
mean,
when I first started, it was all about finding a local designer that could make a cool MySpace layout. And then just sitting on it every single night, just adding 500 friends, going to band pages, being like, you know what? We Came As Romans, you know what, I feel like this type of band, you know, fans of this band would like We Came As Romans. You just go there and you just add them as a friend every single night until they're like, you've reached your limit. And it was just, man, those were the days. And now it's like on Facebook, you can't even like add, people have to like you. Like,
yeah.
You can't.
Yep, you can't do go and make it happen.
Unless you're paying money for like ads or something like that, so.
Yeah, and even then, I mean, you still, you know, you can have, you know, I think what's, you know, it's so different about it too is it's so much harder to get your product out there. And I mean, you might be able to relate to that in terms of like how Facebook specifically works. You're talking about their algorithms and how it's like, okay, well, you've got 50, you know, or you got 200,000 people that like your page, but 50 see it, you know, and it's because you got to pay more money. And it's kind of like, well, that kind of sucks, you know. And but at the same time, from a, you know, I guess if you're looking at like a Facebook level, you're at the end of the day, it is a quote unquote free service to sign up for, you know, and so they got to bring that money in somehow, you know. And obviously they've got their own ways of doing it, but at the same time, you know, if you need to pay a little bit of money to hit your 200,000 reach, then I think sometimes you have to, you know. That's another probably investment.
Yeah, I just know that when I worked in music, I mean, it was hard for people to, you know, get $100 a night to get show to show with gas.
Right.
So now you're talking about all types of promotions require kind of, you know, you got to pay for it in a weird way. But, you know, something that I'm sure that's different now, which, you know, like I'm somewhat familiar with like SoundCloud or how some of these rappers are breaking and things like that. The one good thing is, you know, back in my day, it's like, you know, you would find a band and like their recordings had to be with a certain person. Or you would start seeing their traction. You would see their plays on MySpace. Or you would kind of see how many Facebook stuff, you know, they would get their likes.
Sure.
Where now it's probably all you got to do is you just listen.
Yeah.
You have to really know if something's good or not, which kind of in a weird way makes things a little more organic and makes it a little bit easier for if you have a lot of talent now and you try to maximize your talent and you put your stuff out there. Maybe that does make it a little bit easier because you're like, you know what? I don't really know about social media. And yeah, we don't have 30,000 MySpace friends. I only have 2,000. But the talent is there. that might be something that's a little bit different, that might be more beneficial for everybody now, because it means the more talented people are the ones getting the more recognition, or the ones that are noticed, because the talent kind of has to stand out more these days.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit, I think, easier to create the music, you know, certainly. I mean, obviously you can do a lot of it from your laptop, you know, so you might not have to, I mean, you still got to buy certain programs and then you got to do this and that. So I think it's easier for people to create music, you know, but it's maybe with that, obviously it becomes a little bit harder to stand out because, you know, you've got 20,000 songs a day uploaded to Spotify, you know, so that's, you're looking at that. And if you're someone that's going through, you know, new music playlists, you're like, oh, you know, digging through related artists, I mean, you can get lost in that, but you've got so much to weave through. I don't know how you do it. I think it's almost a little bit more luck now than it was, you know, 6, 7, 10 years ago, for sure.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. But, you know, I wanted to just kind of end on, just kind of transitioning back to what you're doing now. You know, I think that's a lot of great things. I know you mentioned you're about to open your third location, then you're looking at your fourth one. So what goes into that for you when you're deciding kind of where to go? Is it in terms of, you know, it's kind of, I'm sure there's a lot of like local, you know, is it like a lot of competition, kind of seeing what's already there, or kind of what goes into that for you?
It's still a little bit of a newer industry. I mean, the advantage that I have is, as long as there's people there, they're going to have dogs.
Sure, right.
you know, I do live in, you know, the D.C., you know, Annapolis, you know, kind of.
Sure.
I live right in between D.C., Annapolis, and Baltimore, so I'm, like, right in all the subdivisions and the communities here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still kind of new. I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's dog daycares almost everywhere, but I mean, there's still a lot of places where they're not.
Sure.
It's still kind of a new concept. So, you know, when I go back and kind of talk about having the right team, you know, we have an amazing realtor. I feel like he's probably the best realtor in the entire county.
Yeah.
So he knows these areas. I mean, he grew up here. I mean, so he's been living literally in the area his entire life. He's seen the communities grow. He has 50 properties at a time that he's trying to lease out as well. So he's just incredible being able to find the spot. Now for me, it's the important thing is just doing everything organically and making sure that we're taking care of you know, as many people as we can and as many dogs as we can the right way.
I mean
if I wanted to open, you know, 4, 5, 6 locations, you know, I'm lucky to be in the position I'm at where I'm at now, to where I could do that, but it wouldn't be what's best for the animals.
Sure.
It's best
sure.
for the people. I'm a firm believer, if you do the right thing kind of happens to you. And if you just try to think of things as financial, or you try to see things short-sighted, or you try to half-ass things, your ultimate, you know, success or reward will be half-assed as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I brought both my brothers down here. You know, we have the two locations, and they're doing great here. And we're finally in a place where both of those locations kind of have managers in place, where I feel like they're kind of self-run in a way.
Sure, yeah.
And so now it's time to grow. And, you know, we're not going to grow too fast, but the business model's changing a little. We're doing a little bit smaller facilities, not as many dogs and things like that.
Sure,
just always trying to evolve, man.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, what's the biggest thing that you learned through going through, you know, the process of becoming a small business owner and succeeding at that? Like, was there something that, when you started, you're like, okay, this is what it's going to be. And then, like, was there something that you learned was completely different than what you thought it was going to be going into it?
I've learned that people care about their dogs way, way, way more on a bigger scale than I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first opened my one, the fact that I had to double in size, and, you know, we had to put another $350,000 in just to double in size 3 months after opening. And 3 months after that, my second location is less than or right around 10 miles away, so it's not even that far.
Yeah, yeah.
And just amazing how much, you know, people are, you know, loving their animals. And as somebody who has, you know, 3 dogs, and I've been training dogs for 17 years or ever, however long it's been now, it's amazing to see.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I feel like dog daycare, dog boarding, professional services are just going to continue to grow. People are going to continue to kind of take care of animals.
Yeah.
You know, our parents or our grandparents, you know, they were getting married and having kids at age 20, 21, and that was normal. people now these days are having kids later and focusing on their career themselves. So they're getting animals earlier and they're really spending more money and taking care of their animals. And my whole goal is I want to kind of set the standard for the pet care service industry in terms of dog daycare and boarding. I want to make sure that if anyone else in the entire East Coast wants to open a dog daycare, they look at us and say, that's how you do it. I feel like we kind of are. I mean, I'm working and I'm striving to become better every single day in that. And just the rewards for it is incredible because, you know, dogs aren't like a lot of people where they'll be nice to your face but talk shit behind your back or, you know, act like they like you when they don't. I know right off the bat if a dog doesn't like me. And if a dog is showing me love, that means the dog absolutely loves me. So working with, you know, dogs in general and just kind of seeing, you know, how amazing of animals they are, it's been – I mean, the experience that I've had and how much bigger the community can be of supporting animals and how many more people, you know, want to bring their dogs to things like this than I ever thought. It's just been – it's been mind-blowing, and it's so cool.
Yeah. No, I think there's it's awesome. I think it's a story of, you know, the fact that people certainly do care a lot, you know, which I think it's – I don't know if it's the right way to put it, but I think people – I think people have always cared about dogs. I think, you know, our parents and our grandparents and before that, I think people always cared about dogs. But I think the way you care about them might be different now. You know, obviously back then there weren't, even still now, you mentioned there's not a lot of like boarding facilities and things like that. So back then there probably certainly wasn't, you know. So if you go out of town, what do? You know, I mean, certainly dogs are much different. Like I've got cats and cats just do whatever the hell they want. Like you can leave a cat at home for 2 weeks, or not 2 weeks, but like a week, say, set out food, water, boom. They just shit in the house and that's it. You know, but like you can't do that with a dog, you know. So like back in the day, what would you have done with a dog? Just hope someone can, you know, come by, check on it every once in a while. But now obviously you've got this avenue where you can make sure that they are getting taken care of. You know, obviously you got to spend money on it, of course, you know, but I think people now are getting to the point, especially where they're willing to do that, to know that when their dog is going to be safe, you know, that the dog's going to get the attention, you know, certainly needs more so than other animals, you know, and being properly taken care of, I think certainly means more now, or maybe there's just better ways to do that when you're out of town or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I think regardless if it's a daycare or boarding facility like my place or it's just a family member or anything, I mean, the important thing, at least for me, when looking at taking care of animals, you just want to make sure your animal is in the care of somebody who actually cares.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, somebody who's there and actually responsible, same way that you would kind of, you know, send your kid to a certain daycare. I mean, you wouldn't go to a place that looks like, you know, it's nasty, looks disgusting.
Sure, definitely.
You know, they're screaming and stuff like that. Like you want to be at a place that really cares. And I've probably gone above and beyond, maybe even too much than I ever needed to in terms of the amount of money I've spent and the amount of staff I have. But, you know, like it's all worked out. And now people know that we care about their dog. And no matter what, if they're bringing their dog to us, their dog is going to be overlooked, and there's going to be a person in that room at all times.
Yeah, definitely.
That their dog is there. So that obviously, you know, requires a lot of payroll and a lot of making sure you're hiring the right kind of staff. But I mean, people will pay for people that care.
Yeah,
that's what I've learned. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's that's kind of how you stand out, you know. And obviously it's not necessarily an overcrowded market now, but if someone were to come in now and start their own kind of doggy daycare, I think one, obviously you've been there, so you've kind of got that, but even if anything else, you've got that reputation of knowing, oh, we go there, our dogs will be taken care of, they genuinely care. And I think if you were to start out, you know, right now with, you know, somebody else, and what it comes down to is obviously you can get maybe the same services, right? But people are going to go to, even if it is, like you said, more money, people are going to go to where they know that they can feel better about it, you know, and I think that's...
Or know that they can, I mean, I always tell, you know, we have 7,500 people that have used us in the past 3 years, and about 10,000 dogs that we've serviced it in just between the two locations.
Yeah.
And if there's ever an issue, I have my personal email on there, and if they send me an email and they want to talk, I send them my personal phone number and let them contact me at any time. Why? I mean... Is it sometimes a burden getting phone calls or texts from, you know, these people all the time? But, you know, like, hey, you know, can you send me a picture, blah, 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 things like that. And, you know, I might be busy, I might have a million things, or I might be traveling at the time, but I always take care of it because that it's a privilege to me to have somebody trust my facilities and my staff to take care of literally an animal or someone that they view as an actual family member.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they did a poll where like 70% of like families view their dog as like part of their family.
Well, it is for sure.
So, yeah, I don't really mind doing that. I will never be a business owner where if it's not myself, the main person there and the main person overseeing everything is not able to be communicated at any time.
Yeah.
That is extremely, extremely important.
Definitely.
Just like, and I think that separates us. A lot of people when they open businesses, they just look at, like, I'm going to open this business. I don't want to deal with all the extra stuff.
Yeah.
But the extra stuff is what separates. You know, like you said, you know, sure, somebody could come in across the street. And we actually do have a dog daycare across the street. And, you know, if they come in, they want to do the same services as us, that's fine. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
But, you know, are you going to be able to do all the extra stuff? And you know what? If you are, guess what? Like, I deserve to be beat.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but I haven't seen that happen yet. And, you know, I'm very lucky to have, you know, the customers I have and the staff
definitely.
I have and the dogs I have. So,
absolutely. I'm sure you got a lot of repeat, you know, customers, right? You know, coming back routinely. So I think, again, that reputation is going to go a long way, you know, in terms of, you know, keeping, you know, customers and clients coming back and new ones coming in. You know, obviously, people that have dogs, they know, you know, you look at like, how many people in a neighborhood have dogs, right? And how many people in a neighborhood probably talk, you know? So all that just spreads. And I think that's kind of probably, you know, a fire part of how you've gotten to where you are. You know, I think, you know, again, people always think it's the money, you know? And again, that is a part of it, you know, when you're, especially when you're starting out. But I think the bigger almost investment is certainly your time and your attitude, you know, how you're going to take care of inevitable problems that come up, you know, or just, you know, like you said, the late phone call or late text, that might be an annoyance, but at the end of the day, that is kind of your living, you know, it is, you know, it's kind of how you make, you know, the living you've got, how you make a lot of money. So, how you make your money, you know? So I think that's one of the things that you kind of have to look at and say, it is just part of it and it is what it is. And like you said, it's great. It's a blessing that they trust you to take care of something that's so very important to them, you know? So
absolutely,
kind of not the least you can do, but you know, a part of that is something you have to sort of have an obligation to at least be there for them on that personal level, and that kind of helps out the end of it as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Matt, I appreciate it. I don't have, you know, anything else here, but I'm glad we were able to get this knocked out, come in a little bit early in the morning. Glad this time worked out for both of us, and I think it was a good time.
All right, I really appreciate it, man. Congratulations with this.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I appreciate it, man. Have a great day. See ya.